doing these things, we actually find that they're, it's strange. They're doing something different, but the product is what seems to be kind of worrying. And that seems, the product is the, is in the realm of work, but the actual process, and the actual process does also belong to work, but the people who sustain themselves doing these things are doing this under the condition of labor. They are doing these, so let's take, for example, an artist. An artist, when an artist creates art, let's just take a traditional artist, they take their pencil and they go to a piece of paper and they draw. That is the actual activity that they are doing. Now, this is labor, because ultimately they're going to use this to pay rent and whatnot. The AI artist is doing work because ostensibly they're not doing this to pay rent or whatnot. I mean, they might. Yeah, that's interesting that the way that the process, the actual activity of production seems to not only affect the, you know, we might say the economic value of it in terms of like supply or whatnot, but even the actual sentiment or beliefs that we have about the work. Yeah, that is interesting. So one of the things that I wanted to think about, or one of the ways that I wanted to understand this, was in terms of automation, because we can think of these systems in terms of automating certain processes. Like, for example, with AI art, you can kind of automate the production of art. If you really wanted to, you could. But the interesting thing here, and this is the, if we actually look at the activity itself, there are actually two activities going on here. So again, the artist actually goes through and uses like artistic techniques of medium and whatnot, whereas the AI artist is going through a different process. Now, I've actually watched people produce this art, and it is not at all like drawing or painting or anything like that. It is, it's interesting because it's text to image, but at the same time, you still do a little bit of image manipulation. So you can go in and say, like, you know, it's notorious for not doing hands very well. So you can like go into the hand and say, oh, can you fix this up? The interesting, so the thing that interests me about this, when we think about this in terms of automation, though, is that the automation is two things. One, automation has to be produced, so you have to set up factories. I think Arendt would consider that a form of work, because it's the construction of worldliness, or a kind of worldliness. You are instantiating a factory, and it takes away, this is the other feature of automation, it makes labor less labor intensive. So when you were farming and you were plowing a field, before we had cattle to do that job for us, it must have been incredibly backbreaking. No one actually wants to go out and, you know, I mean, I'm sure there are people who like farming, but if you could make it easier on yourself, why would you not? So the interesting thing about labor is it tones down part of the actual process. We do the thing less. Now, the curious thing that I have about viewing AI art as automation of drawing processes is it puts drawing in the position of labor, which strangely enough it is, and yet there's a part of me that says, do we really want to like automate away the creative process? Not just in terms of like, you know, because it's difficult or whatever, but I mean, it's art. It is a medium for expressing something in a certain way. And if moving towards something like, you know, AI art is an attempt to get away from doing that, my question is that necessarily desirable? And it might very well be. This is not a sort of like slag on doing AI art. I've seen it, and I am convinced that people get into these just in the same way that people can kind of get into drawing or whatnot. People who do AI art, they've described a kind of coaxing of the prompts or whatever, picking certain places and making intelligent decisions when they do it. So it has its own sort of progress or process enjoyment, but viewed under the lens of, well, drawing is laborious and we want to get away from doing that, doesn't seem to square against the experience that artists themselves seem to have. And so, again, this is, I'm kind of just musing on the meaning of this. Does this do something to a creative process that really is demonstrably otherwise enjoyable? Is art really labor? Might people be misrecognizing what is laborious about the artistic process? If labor is sustaining the life process, you know, paying your rent and food and whatnot, are we kind of mistaking what is laborious about art if we want to stop doing it and just automate it?
So I think I'll jump in here and say that, I mean, I sometimes wonder, thinking about Arendt's distinction between work and labor, that, you know, obviously with like the real art, or like, you know, the professional artist, there seems to be, as you kind of mentioned earlier, like anything in modern society, there's some sort of conflation between the two, right? Like, I am both laboring to survive, to sustain myself, but because of the society, the system, whatever you want to call it, that I work within, that like work can be the vehicle in which I do that, right? Like producing unique things, in this case, artwork, like earlier we talked about buildings or whatever it might be for the engineer, the designer. So you've got that kind of distinction. Where I get like, so I'm going to, full disclosure, as I was listening to Brandon talk to our listeners, I looked up a AI text to image generator because I'd actually never seen one before. Like, I'd heard about them and I had seen the images they produced, but I wasn't super familiar with them, right? And so I started fooling around a little bit with it. And I have to say, at least from my very anecdotal initial experimentation, it kind of seems like it's producing mock works. A lot of the works that I come up with as I type things in, you know, text to image generator, they look kind of weird and like almost fake. I'm not really sure, like, I'm still trying to process what that actually means for this whole thing. And I know every time this sort of discussion comes up with anything to do with AI, people always say, well, it's in its infancy, it's going to get better, et cetera, et cetera. There's a difference between like work in the creative process of like actually making something. There's a spontaneity there, there's an unpredictability there, versus what I kind of see through this generator, which is basically there's a vast number of inputs and those inputs combine eventually to create something, right? But there's no like this sort of creative impulse, the spontaneity that we're so familiar with like the work, in this case particularly the work of art. It's just kind of like missing. And so there's this kind of almost like weird, uncanny feeling, in the same way, you know, people talk about the uncanny valley with AI generated like human beings in film and stuff like that now, where like they look almost like a person, but like they're not. And it's very weird. It's very unnerving. That's kind of my current experience. And I don't know, I'm still trying to process like how it relates to Arendt's distinction, but it's very clearly there. And again, I know people will probably say that it's, you know, where it's in its infancy, we're still trying to figure it out, but there's something strange between the spontaneity of work and its relationship to creativity and this sort of input. Again, it's almost more labor related. Like, we got to have everything organized and put all the pieces together, and it'll just like create these things over and over again using the same input processy. But there's no sort of, again, spontaneity there, creativity there. It's just like combining stuff to make things that look similar to other things that have come before and that are related to these inputs.
Everyone here has probably played or heard of or seen at some point in their lives the phenomenon that is Minecraft. In Minecraft, and don't worry, Hale, this will make sense eventually, there are these things called biomes. And these biomes are procedurally generated. So some of them are tundra, there's snow, some of them are certain heights, so others are marshes, others are grasslands, and these are procedurally generated. What does that mean? It means that you start with something entirely random, and then you give it some rules about how it should go from there, and then once it does that, you give it some more rules until you get something that, generally speaking, looks pretty much the same. You get a grassy field with a few oak trees on it. You get a hill with a mountain on it. And then maybe you add a tree or a patch of ice or a few animals or things like that. So that's, you know, the process Minecraft uses to generate its landscapes. Let's move to what AI art does, or text-to-image generation does. There's a procedure there, but that procedure is not as fine-tuned, as directly controlled by firmly constrained rules. The rules are much looser. And the rules are essentially what these text-to-image generators do is they have all of their words are represented by basically vectors. And this is a little bit of an oversimplification. Different systems work a bit differently. So words are connected to other words. So some proto-examples of text-to-text symbols were, like, if you did horse plus person, you would get rider. And you could add words together and you would get other words. So that's essentially what is happening with these text-to-image generators, is you start with something entirely random. Then you take these things that connect words to other words and also connect them to a whole bunch of images in the data set. And those things connect to each other, and they take something that's entirely random, like static on an old TV, and eventually, after you throw it through all of these soft correlations between words and images in the data sets, you get something that approximates what the words mean according to what the system thinks. Hale is absolutely correct. Like, that's why AI feels so weird. AI art generation feels so weird. But how I've seen people fix that online is they do this art generation process multiple times, and they use little tools to control that process to get a better result. And so if you factor enough of these things into the equation, you turn those soft rules into harder rules, and you get a more creative feeling experience. So the person designing this feels more like an artist and gets the so-called psychological experience of an artist, not the exact same one, but something that is similar enough that there are a lot of people who find making this type of AI art a kind of like relaxing therapeutic experience, where it's like they might not have been able to draw or paint as a child, or perhaps they have some physical disability that would prevent them from doing so. And then being able to generate art in this manner is something that is life-giving and new and relaxing.
I think that's a good, it's a good reminder. I mean, my interest in it is in, again, I've been kind of stressing it, but at the level of the activity, like, okay, we sit in front of this. What are we actually doing? What is the experience we're having? I think it's interesting that you, that is one of the things that is kind of lauded about, you know, what we've been calling AI art, just under an umbrella term, but that it's kind of accessible, right? I mean, if you can put text into, or, I mean, if you can create text inputs, I mean, there's no reason why you couldn't actually produce images with this, if, as long as you can make these inputs and kind of adjust them as you go, and you have the patience to do that. It does take some time, apparently. And there are other, again, augmenting tools. I forget what it's called, but like, going into certain areas and saying, okay, we want to fix this up, you know, this particular region of the image. I've seen that. It's quite interesting and kind of, it's very powerful. But I guess my, and again, I think it's a good question, Hale, what is the distinction between labor and work doing in here? And it's this, again, it's this idea of, well, what is it, what is the actual activity for here? Because apparently, and this seems to be, I'm extrapolating this to more than just like AI art. Apparently ChatGPT has been quite feared for this. It will make certain forms of labor obsolete as a form of automation. And at least in the realm of, at least in the realm of art, we can probably think about writers too in terms of ChatGPT, but my question has been, are we sort of making a misrecognition between work and labor here that really ought to be made distinct? Is this really something that we actually want to automate? I think, Aaron, you're suggesting that, well, maybe some people literally could not do this, or they never got the opportunity to do this, and not so much as a form of automation, but as a form of accessibility itself, right? That might be one suggestion. But that tool does still, it opens the opportunity for a kind of automative experience. I don't want to say experience, but an automative opportunity. If one views drawing as labor, as a means to sustain oneself, or because the point is, if it were work for you, again going back to this distinction, if it were work for you, you wouldn't want to automate it. I'm sure sculptors who have been sculpting all their life enjoy the activity of sculpting. The thought of automating that must horrify them. So it's can only be automation at the level of labor, where that is an intensive experience that you would like to more or less do away with just in order to get to the end of it and sustain yourself. I guess a situation opens up where you want to work because you want the product, and that product more or less sustains you, or not sustains you, but like you want the product, but you don't want to do the thing to get to the product. And that would be something like work, because it doesn't necessarily contribute to the life process. I don't know. I'm blurring the lines here. I really shouldn't. I think this distinction, the more clear it is, I think the more helpful it might be.
So in my computer science and ethics class, we talked about Taylorism, which essentially is a vision or philosophy of work using the traditional definition, meaning like the work that a worker does. So where every person simply performs one very specific task repeatedly. So it changes the nature of work and of labor when, you know, before there was people who, you know, would make a shoe and they would make the whole shoe. They would make all of it themselves. But now the person in the factory like might just only make shoelaces, or might only make like one small part of it. So that experience is, on the human side of things, it's much less satisfying. Like, it's much less satisfying to be the guy who makes shoelaces than the person who can make an entire shoe by herself. On the other side of things, you can produce many, many more shoes through that type of process. And those processes, and this is kind of the same thing we see with AI-generated art, is like we can produce much, much, much more art. And even though some of it is worse, when you're able to do it so quickly, like if you can generate 100,000 versions of something through trial and error, you're probably going to get something that looks decent, versus an actual artist who can maybe only draw like 10 pictures in a day just because of the physical constraints. So the point that I'm trying to get to here is that Taylorism influenced how we see society and how people saw their role in society, where before it was like, I am the person who crafts this thing in its entirety, and that's what it means for me to be a person in society. And it changed it to, I am the person who does this very, very specific task, and that's it. And like, so people became, after Taylorism was introduced, there was kind of social uproar, but eventually we got to this point of today in society where everyone kind of should have their own specialization, or it's like, that's kind of the assumption. Is that really a good thing? Is that an ethically good thing? It's really hard to say. I think a lot of people would say it's not. It certainly doesn't feel that way from the perspective of human experience. That's more or less the same thing you're articulating in terms of why we shouldn't automate art. I do want to say on the other side of things that, you know, there are things like we have, like with Leonardo da Vinci's notebooks, with like drawings that are so original, so unique, so like literally acts of a genius. There's no AI that will ever be able to compete with that. Doesn't matter like what it becomes. Like his life experience of, you know, drawing for his entire childhood and his insatiable curiosity created a result that, I don't know, probably will never be seen again in that exact form in all of human history. So I think we shouldn't underestimate the uniqueness of humans and how much they can contribute.
As much as an AI might be able to produce a certain image and even produce, you know, leaps and bounds of quantities of things, there will be these exceptional instances where humans produce something that is so original or so creative. It's kind of I don't want to say like an appeal to intuition, because I think it's actually right, but there does seem to be something about the way that a human, a very well-honed artist, could make something beyond the pale of procedural generation. The interesting question is, does that actually sort of pan out in terms of the way that art is actually produced? Like, are the circumstances that enable artists to do that, are they there to allow artists to be geniuses in a technological society that more or less seems to, it threatens to pivot to no longer materially supporting that?
You're hinting at how, like, modern text to image generation AI is actually used, right? Like, especially people who really, like, I'm a layperson to the most extreme, like I kind of revealed earlier on this conversation. I used text to image AI for the first time 30 minutes ago. But both of you were kind of talking about how, you know, in itself, it can be kind of a tool that can be kind of mastered and tweaked to produce images that are, like, quite impressive. But, like, there's this, as you were saying that, I was thinking how, you know, that's not really what people think about when they think about, like, pure AI, right? Because, like, people have this kind of image of pure AI as, like, this self-learning, doing its own thing. Like, it's just creating stuff, right? Like, you just press a button and suddenly it's created this masterpiece. It's, like, really, really good and seems like a real piece of art. Whereas I was trying some admittedly probably pretty simple text to image AI that was producing stuff that looked pretty weird, to say the least. I think that that's the point that I'm trying to get at, is like, there's a way in which this sort of thing actually becomes another tool in the artist's repertoire. It's not really, like, it's another part of, like, digital creation, but it requires that creativity of an individual person to be successful, to really, like, produce something good. I'm still trying to grapple with what the meaning of that really is. And if there's, like, some other, you know, avenues of AI that I'm not aware of where it's like, oh no, it is actually producing stuff that's, like, equivalent to or better than real human artists without their input effectively, or at least with, like, only the initial inputs and not any other influence. But as it stands right now, tweaking, like, a semi-random generator and, like, learning its tips and tricks to, like, get the best use of it isn't really, like, what I think actually the lay population thinks of when they think of, like, AI in terms of, like, generating artistic content. but it kind of seems like that is more or less what we're dealing with at the current time. And so, yeah, again, that kind of seems more like a different avenue, like a more interesting kind of weird avenue of digital art that is considerably less threatening than I initially thought.
It's just another tool. I wonder if that's really all there is to say about it being just another tool, again, kind of anticipating the actual like content ecosystem that this has the potential to change, considering that it works a lot faster than artists and whatnot. I've played around with it a little bit too, and it seems like you have been. It can seem like kind of just like a little novelty, and it's like, why is this such a big discussion? Like, there's no way that this could compete with actual artists who know what they're doing and produce and have trained to be good artists and make really great art. But I have it on good authority from people who are staunch opponents of this stuff that the reason they take it so seriously is they've encountered AI art that is quite moving, that it really could do the job of an artist. Now, I wonder, you know, it would probably require a lot of human supervision, and so it seems like a lot of the what is threatening about it in terms of like production, you know, quantity and whatnot. If you were going to make something that is moving, it has to kind of get the okay of one particular human heart, and then it gets posted, which that would be a real bottleneck. Can't wait to see them, you know, automate very accurate like sentiment analysis on image generation, and then they're just pumping out automated affectivity or something like that. That would be scary. I've been your host, Brandon, and I've been joined by Aaron and Hale. Thank you so much for listening.
You can find archived recordings of the Canadian Philosophy Show on mixcloud.com/thecanadianphilosophyshow and tcps.podbean.com.
This is Bird Note. Not just any songbird can take on a monkey or a falcon, but an unusual flycatcher called the great kiskadee faces these predators head-on, sometimes even riding on the back of a falcon for a few seconds to drive them off. Bright yellow below with a brown back, the kiskadee's head is boldly striped in black and white. Its call announces its name. From a perch above a stream, the kiskadee swoops low over the water, deftly grabbing a minnow with its bill. Of the hundreds of species of flycatchers, most mainly eat insects. The great kiskadee eats insects too, but has adapted to a broader diet that includes lizards, snakes, and fruit. If you feed your dog outside, it will even help itself to their food. Chunky and robin-sized, kiskadees live along wooded edges near water all the way from South Texas to Argentina. They're a familiar sight around rural towns and villages. Other species of birds may even choose to nest in the same tree with a pair of kiskadees to benefit from the bold defensive behavior of this unconventional flycatcher. For Bird Note, I'm Michael Stein. Did you know you can listen to Bird Note in your podcast app? Subscribe to Bird Note Daily and never miss an episode.
Embark Sustainability Society is an independent, student-centered nonprofit working across SFU campuses. Embark focuses on climate and food justice in their programs and initiatives. Some of their ongoing work includes their food rescue program, learning gardens, and sustainability career nights. Discover your role in building a sustainable future based on your unique skills and interests. Learn more at embarksustainability.org and follow along on Instagram at embarksustain.